the Minor Conversations podcast. I'm Mick Reinhardt, and I'll offer you a glimpse behind the game day experience in the Eastern League. Thanks for joining me. If you like what you hear, do me a favor and spread the word. On iTunes, you can subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. You can now also find us on Stitcher, Google Play, and TuneIn. Our website is minorconversations.com, and you can catch us on Twitter at minorconspod, MinorConvsPod. Now, on to the show. For this episode, I'm joined by Tanya Petrunak, Director of Marketing and Executive Director of Baseball Town Charities for the Reading Fightin' Phils. Tanya returned to the team 5 years ago, and in her position with Baseball Town Charities, has recently helmed the development of the Savage 61 Dream Field, the first baseball field in Berks County that is designed specifically for children with physical and developmental challenges. Traditional baseball diamonds are not suited for those with special needs, whether it's the uneven terrain, the change from dirt to grass, the mound in the middle, or even the raised bases. Instead, Miracle Fields are inclusive to all who wish to enjoy the great game of baseball. April 21st was opening day for the Baseball Town Dream League as players, coaches, volunteers, sponsors, and the Red and Fightin' Phils front office staff and players opened up the new facility. We get her impressions of that day and what the entire project has meant to her and the Fightin's organization. So sit back and enjoy episode 7 of the Minor Conversations podcast with my guest, Tanya Petrunak of the Red and Fightin' Phils. Thanks for joining me, Tanya.
Thanks for having me.
Your time in Reading goes back to at least in 2000 when you were interned with the team.
Yeah, I actually started here when I was 15 years old, if we're going back that far, as a diamond girl here at the Reading Phillies. That was my first job besides my family coffee shop was coming out here and giving away some of our promotional items and helping people to their seats and knowing the ballpark to get people into the right place.
Wow. Did you love baseball, the Reading Phillies? How'd you get that job?
I played softball, and I had a friend whose grandfather was a season ticket holder here, and she had done her, she had started her Diamond Girl job here the year before and said, why don't you come with me? And her grandfather walked me into the front office one day, and they offered me a Diamond Girl position at that time. So, yeah, I've been here and, since about 15. So it's been a very long, long time here at the ballpark.
The internship program in Reading is well known for producing longtime employees and others who go on to big positions in other industries. What do you attribute that kind of success to?
Well, you know, here at the Reading Phillies or the Fightins, as we call ourselves now, we really throw the interns right into the fire and give them a lot of responsibility right off the bat. You know, we don't just have our interns run for coffee and, you know, get the mail, although those are some of the things that we also do. But, you know, we also have the responsibility of building a sales book and making the phone calls and, visiting groups when they get here to make sure that they're having a good time. So, we really consider ourselves a teaching hospital. And, as a full-time employee now, it's our responsibility to teach the interns what goes on day to day and, you know, hand over the reins once the season actually begins.
So after you interned, you were hired full-time and worked 4 years on the game day staff. From there, you went on to work for the Greater Reading Convention and Visitors Bureau. What was your role there?
You've done your research. I started off there as their sports marketing person. So my responsibility was to go out to different cities and find different sports tournaments to bring into our city. So I do know our venues fairly well here in the city. Something like the Body Zone or some of our other community parks that, you know, have a few baseball fields. So my job was to go to, the National Association of Sports Commission's trade shows and make sure that we were bringing different events here into our city. It was a really big economic development position, you know, just trying to grow the economy here in Reading. And then after I was doing the sports thing, I grew the position and I started working as the convention salesperson. So then I was bringing some conventions into the city. you know, some of the bigger ones that we've had here, like the Jehovah Witness conventions, which, you know, over the summer brings about 60,000 people into the city. It's a pretty big convention that comes in every year. And then, I moved up after that and I became the vice president of marketing and operations for the Convention and Visitors Bureau here in Reading. I held that position until, I decided to stay home with my brand new twins. So, it was a good stint with the Visitors Bureau. And it was a really great experience. And honestly, I think it's helped me here, to step out of here for a little while, to just give me an overall sense of the economic development portion of what we do here at the Fightins as well.
How did you reconnect with the Fightins and come back to eventually take this new position?
You know, I never really lost touch with my friends here at the Fightins. They've always, you know, I've grown up here and we're all so close. When I started looking or thinking about going back to school, going back to work, I reached out to our general manager here, Scott Hunsaker, and just, you know, asked him if he would be a reference for me for my resume. And, you know, his response is, why don't we meet for some coffee and talk about what you're thinking about? And through that meeting with Scott, you know, we talked about maybe me just taking on some part-time responsibilities here, getting my feet wet back in baseball. So I did that, and I worked here part-time for I think about a year and a half until I started really wanting to be back full time. And when I started, I was doing a lot of the you know, corporate sales calls, things like that, things I felt super comfortable doing, you know, outside of the Fightins and within the Fightins organization. And then eventually I moved on to helping out some of our bigger group areas, like our big chamber nights and things like that. And, you know, last fall, I took on my position, that I have right now as the executive director of Baseball Town Charities. And then also, I had dabbled in the marketing and, now have the director of marketing position as well.
How did your time and job responsibilities at the Visitors Bureau help you as you transition to the role you're specifically doing with Baseball Town Charities?
Gosh, that's an interesting question. I think, you know, for Baseball Town Charities and the Visitors Bureau, although both nonprofits, the Visitors Bureau, it's a little bit different. The Baseball Town Charities is a 501c3, and at the Visitors Bureau, we are a 501c6, which meant we could make money. So it's a different entity overall, but I do think it helped me with the overall budgeting and things like that.
Baseball Town Charities was established in 2002, back when you were working the first time with the team. Was it something that the staff was heavily involved with back then?
Yeah, I mean, from the very beginning, everyone here at the time, Reading Phillies, had little bits and pieces. Obviously, Chuck Domino and Scott Hunsaker and Joe Bilek and Christine Haber, who are still, you know, in the staff here, but also board members for Baseball Town Charities. They really took the reins with everything, but we were encouraged to, you know, have a part in it. And obviously when we opened Lowers Park, you know, we were all there for those events. But really the board of directors for Baseball Town Charities had a lot more to do with it than the staff here.
You mentioned Lowers Park, and that's where Gordon Hudak Stadium was built in the heart of inner city Reading. It's given more than 1,000 boys and girls the opportunity to play baseball. Another Baseball Town Charities project was completed in April of 2014 when they renovated Bear Park. Since then, the next project of the organization has been a ball field for the Baseball Town Dream League. Traditional baseball diamonds are not designed for those with special needs, and the closest one of these custom-designed rubberized turf fields is about an hour and a half away. Ground broke on the now Savage 61 Dream Field a little less than a year ago on June 14, 2017, and you recently had opening day. What was that process like to oversee this kind of massive project?
Well, you know, obviously we have a lot of amazing partners that have helped us through that whole process. And, you know, by the time we were breaking ground last year, we had already hosted a few really big events to get us there, to, you know, financially help us get there. So we, you know, hosted a, by the time that happened last year, we had already hosted our first dinner and dream field banquet on our field here at the Fightin Stadium that raised, you know, a lot of money, about $600,000 that night. So that was really the kickoff to the Baseball Town Dream Field, was that big event. And then breaking ground, it made breaking ground a little bit easier, just, you know, knowing that we had that money. And then since then, we've had another one of those banquets and raised a lot more money. And we've had some other really big partners step up to help us build the million-dollar facility that now is the Baseball Town Dream Field. After the last banquet, you know, obviously we've had a long winter with a lot of, you know, construction that we were trying to do. So we got as much construction done last fall as we humanly could. We hadn't laid turf or anything down yet until late last fall. And, you know, we literally up until the week before the opening day, we were still putting up fences and, you know, making sure that all the signs were up and things like that. So, you know, and on top of all of the construction and all of those things, we also had to form a league, you know, a league of baseball players and a league of volunteers. So the volunteers seemed a little bit more cumbersome because we asked that at every single game, every single player that's on the field has a volunteer with them. And if you really look at right now, we have about 100 players playing, and, you know, we have about 9 teams. So at this point, we had to get 700 volunteers or somewhere around 700 volunteers. And that was, you know, a very cumbersome thing to do over the winter, as well as, you know, try to find the players and connect with the right people through the Reading Hospital and Reading Pediatrics and a few other of the companies that work with kids and people with disabilities. So, you know, we were building a field, we were building a volunteer base, and we were also building a league for kids, which is something that I had never done. And I had a lot of great help from the people here at the Fightins and all of our staff. And I'm going to be honest, without the staff that we have had over the last year helping this process, no one, you know, this would not have happened. We did have a lot of great volunteers on committees moving the ball forward. But at the end of the day, the Fightins staff is really the base of Baseball Town Charities.
The Fightins decided Baseball Town was a moniker meant to be inclusive to all. So they decided to build a field that could accommodate crutches, wheelchairs, and other devices to give those with physical and mental disabilities the chance to play baseball. Was this a natural progression from the other projects Baseball Town Charities has done?
Yeah, you know, at Baseball Town Charities, our mission is to grow the game of baseball. And back in 2002, they looked at it as, you know, we have a lot of kids in the inner city that just don't have the financial needs and also don't have the facilities to play baseball. So, you know, that's how Lowers Park happened and that's how Bear Park happened. And about 3 years ago, Chuck Domino, who also works with some other minor league teams, found out about, you know, what is called the Miracle League, which is for kids with disabilities. And there's actually one in Schwenksville, up in closer to Allentown. And when researching, he found out that a lot of kids from our area were traveling an hour to play baseball. And, you know, obviously there was a need here in our area to have more kids play baseball. That were trying, and, you know, by the time they would get to the field, they'd be exhausted and tired. And I know I have 2 7-year-olds that if I put them in a car for an hour and then set them on a field, they would be exhausted. You know, by the time they get home at night, it's, you know, the game ends at 7, they're home at 8, 8:30. And so Chuck had the foresight to say more kids need to play baseball, and went out and formed what we call the Baseball Town Dream League. And the Dream League here now, you know, once we started going out to the Reading Pediatrics of the world, who have a huge constituent of kids with physical and mental disabilities, they came to us right away and said, we can help you, we can get this word out for you. And, you know, since that time, it has just grown. I mean, we have, like I said, we have 116 players at this point. And I know moving forward, we're going to try to make leagues for adults versus children. Right now, everyone plays together. But hopefully moving forward, we just have, you know, so much, it's going to be a very diverse, we're going to be trying to separate some of the kids and some of the disabilities to have, because we have some kids that are, you know, 5 years old and can hit the ball really, really, really far. And we have some 23-year-olds playing that can't do that. So trying to find the right mix is what we're doing right now for the fall. So we'll also have a fall league.
As I mentioned before, you had opening day on April 21st. What was that experience like for you?
I can't even describe it. I'm going to be honest. It was surreal. And, you know, after months and months of trying to build a field and the trying to, you know, seeing the papers of the names of the kids come, but to first have them put on their jerseys and to be with their team and to go through rotations of batting and throwing and getting their team photos, which is something some of their parents never thought would actually happen. And we've had so many parents reach out to us and say how special a day that was. We also had Fightin's players on the field with the kids in the very beginning because we had a Fightin's game that day. So we had Fightin's players come out and play with the kids. And we had mascots there. We had a monster truck there that was handicapped accessible so people could actually get on and off the monster truck. I heard that was a really big highlight from the kids, even though it wasn't baseball related. So we had a lot of great things. We had face painting and all of the things that other little leagues have. And I think, you know, that's what made it special to the parents was actually having a day with their child that really they thought would never happen. So, yeah, I'm super psyched how opening day went after the months of planning. And, you know, that was a really special day. But honestly, that Tuesday, when the first game was ever played on the field, to say that wasn't just a special, you know, would be an understatement. It was super, super exciting to see the first game ever at the Dream Field being played. And opening day was really cool. But, you know, the first game or the second game or the third game now has been, you know, really amazing. And our volunteers, you know, we've reached out to a lot of the youth programs. Anyone 12 and over can participate and help volunteer. And we've had so many baseball teams come out and help these other baseball players, which has made it a really cool thing because they're forming friendships with other kids too, which kids with special needs or adults with special needs, you know, their social circles aren't as big as ours are. And this is really expanding their social circles as well as, you know, giving them confidence that they can play sports too.
Where I live, they have a special Challenger Day game every year where it seems like the whole community comes out and cheers the players and supports the families. It's really special.
Yeah. The cheering, like you said, I've never seen cheering that happens at the Dream Field happen any other place. You know, everyone is cheering each other on, you know, everyone's cheering for every hit. It is really a cool thing to see and even to come out and be a spectator at.
If someone lives in the Redding area or around Berks County and wants to get involved, how can they do that?
Well, we always say there's three ways to support the Dream League, and I may throw a fourth in here. But number one, volunteer. We're always looking for coaches for the teams, and we're also always looking for volunteer groups. For groups of 15, people can come out for one game. It's an hour and a half. It's a really cool team building and heartwarming and great activity. So number one is you can always come out and volunteer. And I would encourage people to get a hold of me right away if they're interested in the spring season volunteering because we already have filled so many dates. The second way is spread the word to other players or other institutions that can bring players. We are never shutting registration for players. You know, a lot of little leagues after opening day or before, you know, 2 weeks prior to their opening day, they shut down registration. We're not going to do that. We're going to keep it open in case someone stops by and sees a game and they want to play. We actually had a player sign up on opening day. We have a fan here at the Fightin's that is blind and sings the national anthem. We asked him to come out and sing the national anthem for us for opening day at the Dream Field. And that day he put on a uni, and now he's part of our orange team. So, you know, the number two way is just spread the word about the players too. And then the third thing I would say is obviously financially, there's always going to be a need, you know, upkeep, all of the uniforms, all of those things. So although our capital campaign is coming to a close, we can always use the resources, financial resources. And then I say, you know, the fourth thing would be just come out and see a game, you know, support us by coming out to one of the games and just enjoying the sunshine and the baseball field and the million-dollar facility that's now built on an all, you know, all turf field. And I don't think you would be disappointed going home.
That's a great place to wrap up. I want to thank you for coming on and telling us all about this really special thing you guys have put together.
All right. Thank you so much, Mick. Thank you so much for having me.
And that wraps up episode 7 of the Minor Conversations podcast. Thanks to Tanya for joining me this week. See the show notes for links how you can help or get involved with the Baseball Town Charities and specifically with the Dream League. Until next time, see you at the ballpark.